You are listening to the testimony of Galvin Lewis. For more information, please visit danieljfriend.com/the testimony. Previously on the testimony.
There's a shipment of devices that are going to arrive in the States. I'm going to destroy them.
I'm going to help you.
Okay. Do you remember the yellow house from your childhood?
Ma'am, are you Monica Williams?
Everybody calls me Monty.
Have you been contacted by anyone of the name Penelope Aldis?
I'm confused. What is this all about?
Your son has been kidnapped.
And I'm my soul's master. I'm the fate's captain.
Let's get you in the car with Penny.
I'm master of your fate.
What's going on with you?
I don't think I'm entirely better, but I don't feel trapped in my mind anymore.
Fancy seeing you here, August.
You're using those devices to drive people insane.
Look at yourself. You're the first person to destroy the tumor and come out on the other side having regained your sanity. You're the Ubermensch, August.
You just need to continue on with the plan to shift the devices. You can handle that, can't you?
Yes.
Why the hesitation?
I saw what could happen, but I think it's avoidable.
Rumor is that the Hirschhorn Museum in D.C. was only constructed with concrete because porcelain would have been too expensive to build the enormous bowl-shaped structure. Whether that is true and not simply a myth started by a few creative Capitol Hill interns who recognized that odd era of American art for what it was is a matter to be left to the fact-checkers. At any rate, Elsie Kelton found the bottle of that giant bowl to be a convenient spot for her call. On a more normal day, there might have been a flock of tourists wandering around the outside of the museum and enjoying the fountain in the courtyard. But there were neither tourists, nor was the fountain running. The cause of both was presumably due to the government shutdown that had just ensued. The museum was closed, its doors locked, and the running water turned off. Elsie held out her scroll and stared at the man on the screen, Oliver. By the grimace on her friend's face, they were at a heated moment in the call.
Why the change of tune? I get that you were never a big fan of the restructuring plan to begin with, but I had the impression that you thought it was better than having the funding for the department completely cut off.
No, I was never a big fan of it. Warwood was open to the idea for a moment, but after reviewing the option a little more in detail, he's completely opposed. It'd be better to lose our funding than to lose our control. You can't let the Senate move forward on this.
I don't think I can do that. The posse is ready to roll with it.
You need to stop them, or so help me.
I'll try, Oliver. I will. But the plan is already in motion, and my influence doesn't reach that far.
Penny and August stood on the side of the California street, looking down an old red brick path that led up to a yellow mansion. The building and its surrounding landscaping was kept in pristine condition. A bed of flowers by the entrance was in full bloom. The blue and pink flowers complemented the wooden sign just above that told visitors they were at the Solomon M. Day Classical Library.
What is this place?
Someone had way too much money on their hands and decided to buy this mansion and turn it into a public library. Uncle Henry used to bring me here every time I came to visit.
Penny started walking down the path toward the entrance, and August followed.
That's an interesting way to spend some money. I think that would have gone farther in other ways.
Perhaps. But there is something comforting about being in an old house full of old books.
Penny grabbed the doorknob and twisted it. A doorbell would have been pointless, because the creaking was all the alarm needed to know that someone was entering. Inside, the foyer smelled old from a combination of freshly brewed coffee and the vintage books that lined every wall not filled with replicas of famous paintings. A woman in her 60s or 70s walked in from another corridor, carrying a steaming pot of the black juice. She lit up the room with a smile, and transfixed her bright eyes on Penny.
Oh, Penny.
The woman set the coffee pot down on a table next to a stack of mugs.
You've grown so much, but I'd still recognize you anywhere.
Dorothy, it's good to see you.
Penny, with a smile as radiant as Dorothy's, rushed up to her old friend to greet her with a hug.
And who is this friend that you have?
Dorothy turned her attention to August.
Dorothy, this is August. August, Dorothy is the sweetest woman you will ever meet. She's taken care of this place for as long as I can remember.
Nice to meet you.
August reached out to greet Dorothy with a handshake.
So, have you read every book in here?
If only. I love reading and rereading everything I can, but there's an endless wealth of knowledge within these walls to devour. I'm just happy I have the privilege of sharing it with everyone who walks through that door.
Don't be so humble. There's no one else who knows as much about the books in this house as you.
I wouldn't be so sure. I think Henry might have me beat. And while I'd love to spend more time catching up with you, I know he wanted to see you rather urgently. He's upstairs in the usual study.
Yes, unfortunately it's urgent, but let's be sure to talk some more soon.
Penny led August up a spiral staircase, down a hallway on the second floor, and into a room with shelves of books lining every square inch of the walls. The shelves were not the basic sort that you would find in the typical library, but were wooden and ornately carved with various florets and geometric patterns. Henry sat in the corner of the room, his elbows propped on a cushy leather chair, holding a ragged old paperback. He leaned his head back, his eyes carefully locked on the pages by way of his bifocals. The title on the front cover looked mundane. Reflections on Education with Special Reference to the Teaching of English in the Upper Forms of Schools. But he studied it, as if the text gave him new eyes with which to see the world. He was too enthralled in the work to notice Penny and August, until at last out of the corner of his eye he caught wind of the fact that two bodies stood right in front of him. Henry looked up and dropped his book down at once. Penny hugged the frazzled man as he stood up out of his seat. August greeted him with a cautious nod.
It's so good to see you again, Penny. And August, you're here too?
Yes, your friends at the HHS didn't want me to stay put.
You seem to be doing better than I expected.
August nodded.
Somehow.
Was the flight at least safe? Uneventful, I hope.
Not exactly. Roarwood was on our flight.
Oh dear. But everything is okay, right? Did he see you?
Yes, he saw us. But we were able to get away. I don't think there's any way he could follow us.
Well, that's a relief. Please, take a seat.
He motioned to the chairs beside him, and the trio took their seats together. August pointed to the paperback that was still in Henry's hand.
What's the book?
Oh.
Henry set the book down on a side table.
Research. The author posits quite an interesting quasi-psychological theory. I've been trying to find something that might better precisely explain what it in the memoryscape is.
Any success on that front?
I believe so.
Henry picked up a large white book beside the one he just set down. On its side, in big, bold letters, read Plato.
Plato? I thought this was a scientific problem, not a philosophical one.
The wisest of wisdom always traces back to something else, even with science.
He flipped open the large book and placed it in front of August and Penny on the center of the table.
Do you recall the allegory of the cave?
That's where everyone is born in a cave until someone finally escapes.
Born in it, but that's not all. They're chained up and can only see two-dimensional shadows flickering on a wall. Those images become their reality.
And then someone escapes?
Yes, and he sees the light for the first time in his life, blinded by it for a bit, but he finally adjusts and his understanding of reality is never the same.
What does this have to do with anything?
Don't you get it? This...
Henry pulled off his glasses and stretched out his arms to the room around him.
All of this is the cave.
He tapped the book.
The Ubermen shows you something more real than what we know as reality.
I remember you saying something similar when you tried selling me on the testing.
And it doesn't make any sense. The Ubermen just helps you recall memories. If anything, that's going from outside of the cave to inside of it.
No, not at all. And I think Plato would agree with me on that. The higher reality is something that you can't access with your hands, at least not in the way we're accustomed to thinking about it. The higher reality is accessed with your mind.
That just sounds ridiculous.
Henry let out a deep sigh and set his glasses down on top of the book.
Let me try explaining this differently.
He clasped his hands.
The world around us is three-dimensional, correct?
Yes.
There's a height, width, and depth to everything, correct?
Of course.
And then there is a fourth dimension.
Time.
Yes, time. It's not physical, though it can be measured by the physical movements of a clock. And of course, light takes time to travel, and you can capture images of things in the present that will soon be the past. But when it comes down to it, the only record of time is in the mind. In memories.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Now, the memory escape that the Ubermen brings you to is essentially a way to access your own mind a little easier, to access that fourth dimension.
I see your point, but when you're thinking about things, don't you lose the three physical dimensions?
Hold on, dear. There is a fifth dimension that we haven't gotten to yet.
I don't understand.
If you make a right angle to a line, you get a plane, two dimensions. If you make another right angle, you get a cube, three dimensions. If you make another right angle, you get a hypercube, a fourth physical dimension, fifth, if you include time.
A hypercube. That's what the man in gray called it.
Henry leaned in.
Exactly. It's part of our mind. It's physical, but not in any sort of way that we're used to. It breaks all the laws of nature we thought we knew, yet no doubt it follows some higher laws that we can't comprehend.
So it really is like some kind of portal. Everyone's been looking to wormholes in space when we've been carrying them around in our heads the whole time.
I suppose it's something like that. And like wormholes, we still know very little about it. It's still unnavigable.
But you used it to find me, didn't you?
No. Well, yes. It wasn't exactly me who was using it. The man in gray brought me to you through it.
You talked with the man in gray?
I don't know how to be certain that it's the same man in gray, but...
Did he walk with a limp?
In his left leg.
I saw him when I used the Uberman too, and he had the limp.
That has to be the same person.
But who is he?
Henry turned to August.
You spent the most time with him. Any other details that we should be aware of?
I'm not sure that there's anything you don't already know. He seemed to know a lot about me. And he warned me against destroying the hypercube and told me not to trust Weston.
And we know that Weston is Rorwood, who has somehow been able to figure out how to navigate the fifth dimension.
It doesn't make any sense.
Didn't Rorwood on the plane look just like Weston in your mind?
Yes, I know that it's Rorwood who I saw in the memoryscape. But I don't understand why he would break into my mind. He was trying to get me to destroy my hypercube the entire time. But why would he do that if he knew about what the hypercube could do? That doesn't make any sense.
I've heard it often remarked that there is something inside of us that shows us the difference between right and wrong. I've always considered that to be an instinct that developed in the human species over time and is constantly changing, but there is some speculation that I'm finding to be more and more believable. But it's not an evolutionary trait at all, but rather something that was intentionally placed within us. Rorwood thought that the hypercube was an evolutionary trait that needs to be changed. But what if the hypercube is grounded in something more objective and unchanging?
Okay, but that still doesn't explain why Rorwood would want me to destroy my hypercube when he's using his own to access my mind.
But you said that the hypercube is sort of outside of time, right?
Henry nodded.
So what if Rorwood is able to see into the future and knows that you were able to recover after destroying the hypercube? What if he thinks that you were able to destroy the things he doesn't like about it, but hold onto its other abilities? Maybe that's what he meant by calling you an Ubermensch.
August scratched his head.
Maybe. But if he can actually see into the future, then why did it take him so long to find us at Monty's house? He should have had people waiting for us before he even got there.
Unless he didn't want anyone to know about his skill.
No. If he really wanted to stop us, he could have easily found a way to hunt us down without anyone knowing.
We need to figure this out, but there's probably something else we should focus on. Every minute we waste is a minute Rorwood comes closer to getting those devices shipped out across the country. We'll have to figure out how he's been able to use the hypercube and who exactly the man in gray is later. But right now, I think there's more important things at stake.
You're right.
Henry widened his scroll, enlarged a map on the screen, and set it down on the coffee table in front of them.
Here's the shipyard where the devices were sent.
August clenched the bolt cutters tight and snapped the lock. Taking it off, he slid the gates open. He made a loud racket, but the noise could barely be heard over the pouring rain. His first task done, August returned to the work van that Henry had idling. Henry set down the scroll with a map of the shipyard that he was looking at. After August closed the passenger door, Henry rolled through the gate, turning a blind eye to the large no trespassing sign. Being prosecuted for illegally entering private property was the least of their concerns at the moment. Penny sat in the back of the van, holding a small black remote.
Are you sure this thing will work in all of the rain?
It should work even better. If you were trying to send a signal across the world, probably not, but since they're just scrambling any nearby closed-circuit camera systems, the clouds will make it stronger.
If you say so.
Penny put it down in a cup holder in the center console and leaned in between August and Henry.
SHDU-811-359-2 is the code for the crate we're looking for. It should be sitting by itself at one of the ends since it just arrived today and is supposed to be trucked off tomorrow.
August squinted through the window, looking at the freight containers as they passed by.
It's hard to see the numbers. Do you know what color it is?
No, I was doing good to find its code.
Henry pulled around a row of containers and slammed on the brakes. He flicked off the headlights as the van came to a sudden halt, urging everyone forward. At the far end of the shipyard, another vehicle drove toward them. Its headlights grew brighter, shimmering through the downpour. Henry shifted the van into reverse. He told Penny and August to hold on and backed up several hundred feet, drifting into an empty parking spot beside several other cars. The security guard rocked his head, tapping the steering wheel of his truck and lip-syncing to the music playing from an era several decades past. As he reached the end of the long aisle on his route and turned the corner, he paused the jamming. He raised an eyebrow at the white van until his curiosity was sufficiently piqued to investigate it more closely. The guard stepped out of his truck, leaving the engine running and his music playing at full volume, not even drowned out by the rain. He pulled out a flashlight and shined it at the empty front seat. Coming closer, he peered through the passenger window and looked around on the inside. Nothing alerted him, but he decided to check the back anyway. He rapped the door with his knuckles. Nothing. He pulled on the handle. It was locked. Satisfied, he turned off his flashlight and returned to his truck. August looked at Penny and Henry, doing his best not to make any sounds. They heard the truck door slam, and then the music trailed off beneath the torrent. August sat upright from his crooked position next to two canisters of gasoline in the back of the van. Penny and Henry adjusted their positions too, but they were all careful not to make any sudden moves that would shake the van.
You think it's clear?
I think so, but we need to be careful. He'll probably come back around on another pass.
August looked out the front window at the nearest crates out in the distance.
Hold on a second. I have an idea.
August pulled open the sliding door and scurried toward the container he eyed. Looking up at it, he saw that the identifying code began with the same letters Penny had recited. He waved at the two in the van to follow his lead. Penny and Henry climbed out, bringing the bolt cutters and two jugs of gasoline with them. SHDU-811-359-2.
This is the right one.
August broke the padlock open with the bolt cutters. He threw the tool to the ground and proceeded to pull open the container's doors. Boxes lined the left and right walls, with an aisle leading down the entire crate. August stepped in, leaving enough room behind him for Penny and Henry to get out of the rain too. He pulled out one of the tan boxes and ripped it open. An Uberman device sat inside, wrapped in plastic and surrounded by snug styrofoam. August pulled it out and held it up.
Looks like we found the right container.
Yeah, we did.
August tossed the device down to the floor.
Care to do the honors?
He nodded to the gasoline can in Henry's hand. Henry looked down at it and sighed.
It's a shame it had to come to this.
He tilted the nozzle of the can down and splashed some of the liquid over the small black box. Henry stopped and stared at it.
So much time and energy. All of it a waste.
No, you learned a lot. The years of research you put in and the advancements you made in understanding the human mind won't be lost.
But we still have to burn it all now.
Penny looked at the gas can in her hand and the boxes surrounding them.
Yes.
August reached down and took hold of Henry's jug.
Why don't you go keep watch outside, in case the security guard makes another lap?
Good idea.
Henry nodded and let go of the canister. Penny and August waited for Henry to leave the shipping container before they continued dousing everything they could with the gasoline. It took them several minutes to carefully cover the boxes from top to bottom with every last drop they had. As they finished up, Henry rushed into the container.
He's coming back around.
Henry swung the two doors behind him as far as they could be closed from the inside. August and Penny sat down their empty jugs and stood still.
The bolt cutters.
Henry's eyes widened and began to open the doors.
No, don't risk it. Maybe he won't see them.
Henry stopped. He took in a deep breath. With no more ventilation, the fumes from the gasoline polluted the air. Henry began to cough. Penny and August stared at him for a moment, as if they might will his gag reflexes to stop. The sound of the security's radio grew louder as his car drove around the corner. It leveled off. The engine hummed steadily. As the truck sat just outside the container, Henry tightened his face and tried to control the cough. The truck's wheels began rolling down the wet pavement again, and the music began to fade. Henry cracked open the door and peeked through. The patrol was driving off, continuing his route. The bolt cutters were still right where August had tossed them. He let out a breath of relief and took in some of the fresh air drifting through the crack.
We're clear. Have you two finished?
Penny shook her can, and nothing splashed.
Sounds like it.
Good. Why don't you go take everything back to the van and get ready? As soon as I light this place up, I'm guessing it won't be long before our security friend shows back up.
I can take care of this if you want.
I made this mess. I need to be the one to clean it up.
August nodded and walked toward the door.
Take your time. I'll pull up at your signal.
Without anyone looking, Penny bent down and picked up the Uberman on the floor. She brushed off the gasoline on the plastic cover and slipped the device into her jacket pocket. August and Penny gently tossed the bolt cutters and gas cans into the back of the van and closed the sliding door. As Penny sat down in the shotgun seat, August paused at his door. There was no music, but the sound of an engine and car rolling along the wet pavement intensified. August yanked open his door and hopped in the seat.
Get down!
Penny slouched down in the chair, still high enough for her eyes to see through the window at what was going on. A silver sedan drove around the corner and stopped just outside Crate SHDU.
Do you have a scroll with you?
Henry had one by the jammer.
August, also slouching down, reached over to the cup holder until he felt the gadget he was searching for. He stretched it open and launched the camera application. August zoomed in to the man who had just stepped out of the car, Rorwood. Henry stood at the edge of the container and stared at the HHS secretary.
I told you, Julian, the therapy doesn't work the way you want it to. This has to end here.
You've been deceived!
Rorwood slammed his door.
For goodness sake, I hope you don't follow through with your plans tonight. But even if you do, this is just the beginning. A small bonfire isn't going to stop me.
How did you know I would be here?
I knew all three of you would be here because the Uberman gives me more power to wield than you can possibly comprehend.
Oh, I can comprehend it quite fine. You found a way to use the same hypercube that you want everyone else to destroy. The same hypercube that you made August destroy.
How many times must I explain it to you before you'll listen to me? I never instructed you to experiment with destroying the tumors because that's what I wanted to do with everyone else. That whole exercise, which we must continue, was to see if there are other ways to help people conquer their psychological malignancy.
Conquer it, destroy it. What's the difference?
Deconstruction begins with small steps.
Rorwood took a few steps toward Henry. He had a gun in his hand.
We'll use those,
he pointed to the boxes of devices,
to teach people how to bury their tumors deep inside their mind, where it won't be able to hurt them or anyone else anymore. Just like we taught August.
For a long time, you had me convinced. But I've realized that it's a pretty big and bad assumption to call the hypercube a tumor.
Are you denying the link we proved between it and the psychological pain between the oppressive systems of traditional morality?
I'm denying that it's a good idea to destroy it or anything of the like. Because what if the hypercube is actually the organ sending out the signals of pain? Perhaps it's more vital than we realized. Would you also suggest that we sever a person's stomach because it's causing the vomit after drinking too much?
Biology and psychology are two different sciences, my friend. Ugh, you know that.
Laugh as you must, but I'm not going to sit idly by and watch you rewrite the fabric of society out of your own folly.
And I reached into his pocket and pulled out a lighter.
Don't you see? We're on the cusp of something revolutionary. August is proof of that. He destroyed the tumor, and now, unlike the others who did the same, he has recovered from the psychosis. Did you even bother to consider that the same thing might be possible for others?
It doesn't matter. It's worth the cost. Especially when you're working with the PRP with so much secrecy. That can't mean anything good.
The PRP, the Americans, borders, and flags, they're all meaningless! You know that.
Not when one stands for outright oppression and manipulation of the masses. I'm not going to let your schemes go on any longer, Julian.
Henry lifted up his lighter. Horwood held up his pistol. His hand trembled.
You can't do this. It doesn't have to end this way for you. It doesn't!
After all we've done together, you're going to kill me over your ambitions?
I don't want to kill you. I really don't. But I'll do whatever it takes to end the pain in this world.
You realize that if you pull the trigger, the security will be here in a matter of seconds and you'll be arrested?
I was hoping to talk you out of it, but if you don't listen to me, I've already taken the necessary precautions. The patrol is in the middle of a tire change and you've already taken care of the cameras for me.
Henry took a step out of the container.
I'll call your bluff.
Don't.
Rowood moved his finger to the trigger. Henry flicked the lighter open.
Don't!
Rowood's hand trembled more. Henry tossed the lighter into the shipment behind him.
You son of a...
Flame touched the liquid on the floor. Rowood pulled the trigger. The bullet drilled into Henry's chest. The blow. His body fell backward into the blaze. Rowood stared as the fire devoured his precious cargo. He hurled his handgun into the flames.
Curse you.
Rowood swung around in the general direction toward August and Penny.
I know you two are here! I know you two are here! And that recording you have won't do you any good. You'll see. Go ahead. Come to DC. At the end of the day, you're an Ubermensch, August. I'm doing this for you. You will join me.
Penny was frozen. August set down the scroll.
We gotta get out of here.
He shoved the key into the old ignition, turned it on, shifted it into gear, and slammed his foot down on the gas pedal.
Like a wolf in the night, all alone in the fight, I'm not gonna give up this time. There are my teeth buried on the laser's edge. Will I fall, or will I take flight? I won't be hunted. I am the hunter.
Hello. This is Daniel Friend, the writer and producer of The Testimony of Calvin Lewis. If you're enjoying this story and would like to help it succeed, please be sure to subscribe for new episodes, rate this show so that more people see it, follow us on Twitter or Facebook to stay up to date, and be on the lookout for the publication of the novel in fall 2022.